from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch. My name is Joseph Backholm, and I am a Senior Fellow for Biblical Worldview and Strategic Engagement at Family Research Council, and it is my pleasure to be sitting in for Tony today. So glad that you have joined us, and you can always find Tony online on Gab at Tony_Perkins. We encourage you to stay in touch with Family Research Council updates by texting the word STAND to 67742. Again, that's the word STAND to 67742. You just never know who's going to get canceled and when, and that's a way to guarantee you're going to get updates from Family Research Council. Also, you can find every Washington Watch program on the Stand Firm app at the App Store and on Google Play, and we encourage you to do that. Lots happening to discuss on the program today. We are going to go to Arkansas. A bill prohibiting chemical and surgical castration of children was passed by the legislature. It was vetoed by the governor, and then that veto was overridden by the legislature. We're going to talk about all of that and what it means for Arkansas and the rest of the country. We're also going to go to Arizona. A city there is pushing back against a local ordinance threatening religious freedom and women's sports. At the end of the program, we're going to talk to Stephen Sukup, who's the author of The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, about what Major League Baseball is doing and their relocation of the All-Star Game from Georgia, and generally what corporate America is doing with its radical shift to the left, or so it seems. Is that true? Does the data support that? We're going to talk about that with Stephen Sukup at the end of the program. But first, to start off, today, Georgia has been taking a lot of heat over its new election laws. The left has been accusing them of being draconian, the Jim Crow on steroids, voter suppression, racist, an attack on our democracy, an atrocity. Those are just some of the labels that have been used to refer to Georgia's new election laws. And some corporations like MLB, Delta Airlines, Coca-Cola, they are buying into this narrative and frankly helping to drive it. But what exactly did Georgia's law do? And what are they taking issue with? What are they concerned about? Well, to talk about all of this is the Heritage Foundation senior legal fellow Hans von Spakovsky, who is a former commissioner at the Federal Election Commission, as well as a former deputy of justice attorney. Hans, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Well, we're glad to have you because we need some clarity on this. The bombs being lobbed from both corners of this particular boxing match. It's hard to understand which way is up, which information is true, which information is not true. And maybe you could start off by telling us whether it's Coca-Cola or Delta Airlines or Major League Baseball, what are they taking issue with exactly?
Well, first of all, everything that's being said in the criticism is completely wrong. In fact, I think this may end up getting labeled as the biggest lie of 2021. And in fact, it's so bad that even the Washington Post, which, as you know, is a very liberal newspaper and wholly and entirely supported Joe Biden in his presidential run, they actually gave Joe Biden 4 Pinocchios in their fact check for making claims like saying that they were cutting down on early voting days in Georgia, that they were cutting back on the amount of time polls are open. I mean, it was just one thing after another like that wasn't true. It's a big bill, but the biggest thing that these companies have been concentrating on apparently has been Georgia's voter ID requirement. And what's so odd about that is that Georgia's had a voter ID requirement in place for more than a decade. Mm-hmm. Now, it only applied to in-person voting. And what this reform bill did is it extended it to absentee balloting. But there are a number of other states that do that. And the voter ID requirement that Georgia has, it's in line with that of numerous other states, including, by the way, Colorado, which is where Major League Baseball moved his All-Star game to.
Where they moved the game, right. And Hans, I've had conversations online and elsewhere about this with people who are supportive of Major League Baseball's decisions, and they claim, I've heard this argument many times, well, nobody is opposed to voter ID. That's not really the problem. The problem is there's a bunch of other stuff that they did that are going to disproportionately affect African-American communities in Georgia, and the real purpose of this is to suppress African-American turnout. What's your response? What are they referring to? Is there any merit to that argument at all?
No, there isn't. Apparently, there were these critics were going around saying, oh, they were going to cut back on the early voting period. That, in fact, is not true at all. In fact, the state added another day so that there are 17 days of early voting. Compare that to the state of New York, which I think has about half that much. And yet New York is the corporate headquarters of Major League Baseball. So, again, they simply cannot actually rationally point to a single provision in the bill that's somehow going to keep black residents of the state from voting. Look, what folks have to understand about this is that, look, these are the same kind of arguments that have been made for years by folks on the left about things like voter ID. The ACLU actually filed a lawsuit when Georgia first passed its voter ID law. They lost the lawsuit. They lost it because the judge in the case, who, by the way, was appointed by a Democratic president, pointed out that after 2 years of litigation, they were unable to produce a single witness who would be unable to vote because of the voter ID law. And we know it doesn't keep black residents of the state from voting because it's been in place for 10 years. We have 10 years worth of turnout data. And not only did the turnout of black voters in the state not go down, it increased dramatically. They've had record increases in voter registration and turnout in the state, including of black voters. So they're just making these complaints up out of thin air.
Well, I got another one for you, and then I want to go into why they're making this up out of thin air. I've also heard that basically this is a coordinated effort by Republicans to essentially starve or dehydrate people while they are waiting in line to vote by making it illegal to give people water. And so this is another just cruel voter suppression tactic. What's with this idea that it's illegal to give people water while they're waiting in line to vote?
Yeah, that is just another ridiculous claim. Look, Georgia has a law that every other state in the country also has that prohibits what's called electioneering or campaigning inside a polling place or within a certain distance of both the polling place and voters standing in line. In Georgia, it's no campaigning within 150 feet of the building, and no campaigning by candidates and others within 25 feet of voters standing in line. Just like the state of New York, in fact, the legislators copied this from New York. They simply added a line to that anti-electioneering provision saying, you know, not only can candidates not campaign in polling places, they cannot give money or gifts to voters, including food and drink. Now, like I said, this is exactly like New York statute. Oh, I'm sorry. New York statute adds tobacco to that list.
Okay.
Not just food and drink. Okay. But
was that an issue in New York?
Well, I guess it must have been.
Yeah.
The point of this is to prevent campaigns and candidates from influencing voters. You know, it's to prevent a candidate from showing up at a polling place with a truckload of pizzas and start handing them out to voters to try to influence them to vote. The law does not prevent voters from bringing their own water and food and snacks with them. It doesn't prevent election officials from providing water, food, and snacks. And so the idea that it's somehow going to keep voters, voters are going to die of thirst or something is just absurd. Like I said, this isn't any different than what other states have done in this area.
it prevents campaigns from trying to effectively purchase someone's vote while they're standing in line. And I think we can all understand if that were legal, you can see why it would be a problem if campaigns were allowed to give gifts to people while they're standing in line to vote. Then, you know, the ballot box become or the polling place becomes a circus of just free gifts being handed out. Now that can't, you know, especially at the presidential level, people are spending literally thousands of dollars per vote. Now, Hans, in the last couple minutes here, why has this become the outrage that it has been? If the law that Georgia passed is actually so similar to laws that exist in states throughout the country, blue states and red states alike, why have they turned this into what it has become?
Because they're trying to use it as a political propaganda weapon. The left, the Democratic Party, all of their allies have been trying to paint anyone who believes in election security and election integrity, in this case the Republicans down in Georgia, as being racist, as trying to keep people out of the polls, even though they know it's not really true because they think it's a potent political weapon that helps them raise money. Right. And frankly, I also think they're doing this intentionally. I mean, they intentionally spread lies about what this bill actually does, I think, to undergird and support trying to convince Democrats in the U.S. Senate to pass H.R. 1. You know, that's the big bill that's now in the Senate, tasked the House, that would be a complete federal takeover of the administration of elections.
Yeah. Do you think this has anything to do the Jim Crow language? Are they trying to get the filibuster passed as well? Do you think that has any connection to this?
Yes, I think it is, in particular because they want to get rid of the filibuster so they can really have one-party rule, so they can shove through any legislation they want without needing any bipartisan control. And again, they're trying to paint this picture that it's 1920 in places like Georgia, which of course is not true, and use that to pass H.R. 1 and get rid of the filibuster.
So effectively, if they can convince everyone that this is a return to Jim Crow in Georgia, then they can convince the country to get rid of the filibuster so that we can put H.R. 1 in, so then the states no longer have the freedom to govern their own elections, and then essentially it's the Democrats get to do everything forever. Do you think, Hans, it's going to work?
I actually think they've overplayed their hand. I've actually been I'm optimistic because what I have seen is, for example, legislators in Georgia and elsewhere fighting back. They haven't retreated like you have seen people do in the past when false charges of racism are put against them. In fact, they've been fighting back, and I think that's actually a good sign.
I agree with you. That is a good sign, and we are seeing some pushback from. So far, I don't see any signs in Georgia that anybody intends to cave, and I think we can be very, very thankful for that. Hans von Spakovsky, thank you so much for your time joining us on Washington Watch. Thank you.
Sure, thanks for having me.
And we are going to continue to talk about national pressure being exerted on state legislators, state elected officials. On the other side, we're going to go to Arkansas, and we're going to talk about a bill that was passed by the legislature, vetoed by the governor. Then the legislature came back and overrode that veto. Arkansas has become the first state in the union to make chemical and surgical castration of minors who think they are transgender illegal. We'll talk about it after the break.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In our time, North Korea remains one of the world's most mysterious countries. Unfortunately, what we do know about North Korea indicates the country is also one of the world's worst abusers of human rights, including violations of religious freedom. The North Korean regime has engaged in an intense crackdown on religion for decades. Today, few religious believers remain, and those who do face grave danger. The secretive nature of the regime, nicknamed the Hermit Kingdom, makes it difficult for American leaders to address these human rights issues. Yet, even though options are limited, the gravity of the situation calls on Western countries to take every action possible to relieve the suffering of the North Korean people, a people who have no chance of speaking up for themselves. To learn more about this important issue, check out FRC's publication titled North Korea, the World's Foremost Violator of Religious Freedom. To access the information you need to stay informed, including a list of policy proposals, go to frc.org/North Korea.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Yesterday, in the Arkansas legislature, they overrode Governor Asa Hutchinson's last-minute veto on the Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act, which is the SAFE Act, which seeks to protect vulnerable minors from experimental gender transition procedures while also ensuring that the government never uses tax dollars to pay for experiments that will damage the lives of children. In quick succession, the House voted 72-25 and the Senate voted 25-8 to override the governor's veto. The bill will take effect later this summer, but will undoubtedly face legal challenges. So the battle is not over. With me now to talk about the SAFE Act and what's next is Jerry Cox, founder and president of Family Council in Little Rock, Arkansas. Jerry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, hey, Joseph, it's a pleasure to be on the program, and it's a pleasure to be talking about this great victory.
Well, we are pleased to be talking with you about it. And first, I should say congratulations to you and your team. And I know that when you get legislation into law, it's always the culmination of a lot of work and contributions from a lot of people. This is probably a more this may be more of a roller coaster than other bills that you've worked on in the past. What's your feeling at this point, given how you've gotten to this point?
You know, Joseph, when you said team effort, I believe, or something to that effect, boy, is that ever true, because first of all, we had a really good law drafted. I mean, it's rock solid. And then we had excellent sponsors in the House and in the Senate. Then we were able to bring in experts from around the country and here in the state to testify in committee, and they made such compelling arguments. And then we had the right mix of lawmakers. I mean, elections do matter. And we had really good lawmakers that just said, we're going to do this no matter what. And then finally, we had a ton of good people out there around the state and the country that called in and said, vote for this bill. And so this is like fighting a war. You have to have everything. You need the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. You need all the right, you know, weapons and everything to go to war. And we were able to do that, and it all came together just right. And, you know, when the governor's override vote in the House we had two votes more to override his veto than we did on the original bill.
What do you attribute that,
tells
that
you
to?
The resolve of the of the legislature.
What do you attribute that to? That you got more votes to override the veto than you did on an initial passage?
I think the legislature gets it. I think they realize that the lives of children are hanging in the balance, and they are absolutely fed up with people on the left somehow trying to just force that agenda on us and somehow call this kind of stuff health care. That is ridiculous. It's nonsensical. And the legislature said, enough of that. We are going to stand up. And they did. And hats off to them. I mean, we need to thank them every step of the way because they did the right thing.
Jerry, what were some of the misrepresentations that you heard in that journey of legislative debate, the governor vetoes it, then the legislature takes it back up again?
Oh, my. This is parental rights, Joseph. Don't you know? To have your little boy changed to a girl, to have your little girl changed into a boy, it's a parental rights issue. That's what the governor said. That's what other people said. Or they said, oh, this is health care. People need to be able to have their little child, their child changed to the opposite sex, because after all, it's health care. And I think, how heartless to do that to a child. Grown people are supposed to protect children, not mutilate them. And that's what this bill prevents. And it's a good law. It's good for children. And how people can call it anything else, I do not understand.
Well, you make a good point, Jerry, because the many studies on this subject that have confirmed that when a child does not take steps to transition, their gender dysphoria goes away in somewhere between 80 and 95% of cases when they don't take steps to make that transition. Gender dysphoria is something you experience for a moment, and then it goes away as puberty approaches and a child goes through puberty. So you're looking at a situation where when they transition, when they take steps, stop puberty, get surgery before that happens, for 85 to 90% of those young people, they are doing something that would not be necessary if they had just waited. And this law just says, no, they need to wait. They need to let that process play out before they render themselves infertile and do other things. But, Jerry, you talked about the governor and kind of what's happening there. He made this point that the conservative thing to do is have the government not get involved in that. That because conservatives are small government people, therefore they should not want the government interfering with a child's ability to castrate himself when he's 13. What's your response to that?
Well, those are some of the same arguments that people have made regarding keeping abortion legal.
Yes.
It ought to be between a woman and her God and the doctor or something like that. And we know that there's a lot more at stake here, with this kind of reassignment efforts and also obviously with abortion as well. You know, some of that talk about people going to commit suicide and all that, Joseph, you and I both know the studies have shown that, yes, people with gender dysphoria do have a higher suicide rate. But if you go through the transition treatments and make yourself into the opposite sex, guess what? The suicide tendencies don't go away.
It's still 20 times higher.
Has it been addressed?
Yeah.
And so there's just so many things about this that were just not true that people kept repeating. And again, I'm just glad our lawmakers were able to see through all that fog and do the right thing.
And tell me that once the governor overrode the veto, the legislature acted quickly. How hard was it to convince the legislators that they needed to override this veto?
Easy. It was very easy. And Representative Lundstrom, Robin Lundstrom, she is like General Patton when it comes to getting things done.
She was the sponsor of this bill in the House.
Yes, she was the House sponsor and the primary lead on this, and she's just amazing. So she went plowing through there and got it done. So hats off to her.
Jerry, very quickly, what does this mean for Governor Asa Hutchinson, do you think?
Well, I guess we'll see going forward. I wish he would have signed the bill. That would have been the good thing to do, but he didn't. And you know what? It's going to become law now anyway, and that's what counts.
All right. Jerry Cox, Family Counsel, thank you so much for your time and your work on this effort. Godspeed to you.
Thank you, Joseph.
Now, coming up, we're going to go to Arizona. A grassroots effort in one city there is trying to protect girls' bathrooms, locker rooms, and sports. They had a major accomplishment last week. We'll talk about it next.
The history of religious persecution in China is extensive, and many are not aware of the current oppression of religious groups taking place there. China restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale. This religious persecution targets those of every faith. Christians, Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong practitioners are all victims of the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to suppress any set beliefs that might compete with the party's ideology. This campaign against religion has had and continues to have devastating consequences for those who simply wish to live according to their conscience. Family Research Council's recently updated publication addresses China's consistent abuses of human rights and explains why they cannot be treated like any other country. Learn more about this issue by visiting frc.org/China.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Welcome back to Washington Watch. My name is Joseph Backholm, and I am sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Last month, by a 5-2 vote, the City Council of Mesa, Arizona, made a unilateral decision to pass a SOGI, which stands for Sexual Orientation Gender Identity Ordinance, that contains broad and vague language that could result in fines of up to $2,500 for those accused of violating it. Now, to overturn the ordinance, around 9,100 signatures from Mesa residents were needed in 30 days. On Thursday, the deadline for submission of signatures, they submitted 11,505 signatures. So now, the residents of Mesa will get a chance to have their voices heard. With me now to talk about the ordinance and the grassroots effort in Mesa is Kathy Herod, president of Center for Arizona Policy. Kathy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks, Joseph. Glad to be on with you.
We are glad to have you. Now, tell me a little bit about the background of this. The Mesa City Council voted for this. Was this a surprise to you? Tell us a little bit about Mesa.
Sure. Well, Mesa is within Maricopa County and adjacent to Phoenix and Tempe and Chandler and Gilbert. And the Mesa mayor, John Giles, has been trying to get a non-discrimination ordinance through his city since probably 2013, 2014. The last election changed some of the votes on the council, so he finally had the votes to get through his non-discrimination ordinance. Now, Mesa is thought to be largely a conservative city. It is a it probably has a significant percentage of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of Mormons. And so a lot of this effort, I think, has been to pass a SOGI in a city that's thought to be conservative and to have the appearance of striking the balance between protecting the religious freedom rights, the private property rights, the women's and girls' safety and privacy, while also giving protections or non-discrimination protections to those that are LGBTQ. Of course, the ordinance does not do that.
So at the national level, we're seeing this debate about the Equality Act and also this Fairness for All concept. Is this Mesa ordinance more like a Fairness for All as opposed to the Equality Act, or is it the really bad Equality Act version?
I would say it's a Fairness for All more than it probably is an Equality Act. I haven't compared the language,
okay.
But if those will remember a Utah, what we call the Utah Compromise,
right.
When the state of Utah passed a non-discrimination law on sexual orientation, gender identity, it to me, it's a Utah Compromise at the city level.
Right. Okay. Now, what's your take on how a supposedly conservative city gets a city council that would pass something like this, that would be so concerning for religious freedom?
Well, I think it takes years of work. I think it's what we see in other jurisdictions throughout the country, where the LGBT community is working in overdrive, working very diligently to pass local measures. They've not been able to pass a statewide law in Arizona. They do not have the votes to pass a statewide law in Arizona. So they are trying to go city by city, and they are co-opting Republicans, and it's all under the guise of diversity. And really, as with so many of these other measures, we're not hearing, oh, here is, Joe Smith, who was discriminated against, who could not get employment, could not get housing, yeah. Could not get services. They're not bringing in any real cases of discrimination. So, again, we see it's being used as a sword to go after people of faith and people who want to determine how to conduct their business.
And that's a really important point, that there are no examples being presented by the city council that would explain why they feel like this is important. But to me, this also highlights, for those of us who just care, for the average voter out there, this is why you have to pay attention to local elections and to local yeah. politics, because the left is prioritizing this. And if we pretend that it doesn't matter, soon we will learn that it does matter. Now, Kathy, there's good news in all of this, too. So tell us the response. The grassroots response to this, the signature, how did that come together so that this is actually going to be something the citizens of Mesa get to vote on?
Well, the citizens of Mesa were offended that the council rushed this through. The mayor likes to say that he consulted with all these different groups and all of that, but the language was finalized before we were even known that knew about it. The mayor actually apologized to me that he kept meaning to bring me into the discussion, but somehow managed to never do so.
Mm-hmm.
But this was truly a grassroots effort. This was the people in Mesa. This was not something that Center for Arizona Policy was driving. Our team was not out going door-to-door getting signatures. This was a true grassroots organic effort where people worked their tails off to get the signatures and turn them in within 30 days.
Was this churches?
Amazing. No, it was certainly not churches. I'm not aware of any church in the city of Mesa that was promoting the signatures on the referral petition.
So who was it? This was just moms and dads and people
residents.
Who... Okay.
Yeah, activists. I mean, I think Mesa does have a number of conservative activists. I would say probably those who have gotten more involved politically through the Trump years. So it was people
yeah.
who understood that this was violating rights and that they wanted to take action.
Now, Kathy, you've been doing this for a while. Do you see that, the fact that this was not kind of – this was a bottom-up effort in Mesa? Do you see that as evidence that the public is becoming aware of why ordinances like this are a problem?
Yes, and I believe that citizens in general are wanting to be more engaged in decisions that are affecting their lives.
Well, we are thankful that they want to make a difference in this. And Kathy, we're thankful to you for taking some time to join us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much, Joseph. Bye-bye.
We are going to continue talking about, bullying by the left in one sense. Coming up, the Major League Baseball decision to pull the 2021 All-Star Game out of Georgia is just the tip of an iceberg that's threatening the nation and the freedoms we cherish. My next guest will be giving us a bigger picture of what's going on and what can be done. We are going to talk about corporate bullying, the corporate wokeism, after the break.
Get a trusted perspective on the news of the day every day. Listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins to get honest and in-depth commentary on what's going on in our nation's capital and around the world. Join Family Research Council President Tony Perkins live every weekday on over 800 radio stations across the country. Or listen to the show when it works for you by visiting tonyperkins.com. On the show, you'll hear from guests like Ben Carson, Senator Josh Hawley, Representative Vicki Hartzler, Molly Hemingway, Pastor Jack Hibbs, Dana Lash, Sissy Graham Lynch, Pastor John MacArthur, Eric Metaxas, Albert Moeller, and more. Tony is joined by leading political figures, pastors, and policy and culture experts who will inspire you to be engaged and informed on the important issues facing America. For a Christian perspective on the news of the day, tune in to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins at tonyperkins.com.
Ever since the Supreme Court handed down its infamous Roe v. Wade decision in 1973 that legalized abortion nationwide, a national debate has raged over whether the government should fund abortion. In 1976, Congress banned taxpayer funding of abortion and Medicaid by passing the Hyde Amendment. Several states have followed suit, passing their own restrictions on abortion funding. However, because government funding is a complex system of joint federal and state programs, completely banning taxpayer funding for abortions and abortion businesses like Planned Parenthood is challenging. There is still much work to be done to free the American taxpayer from funding the horrific practice of abortion. Family Research Council's new publication clearly explains the Hyde Amendment and why we need to keep it in order to save taxpayers from being forced to fund abortion. Access this important information by visiting frc.org/Hyde.
What's on your daily or weekly reading list? Are you looking for honest and informative commentary from fellow believers on the current issues facing our culture? Family Research Council has just the thing. Check out FRC's blog at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts as well as outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Read up on some of our latest titles like Four Disturbing Trends in Religious Freedom Worldwide, Legitimizing Looting Jeopardizes Liberty for All, The Media Still Doesn't Get It, Conservatives Tend to Vote Conservative, and more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you live out your faith and to stand for truth. Our blog is here to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Joseph Backholm sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Now, at the beginning of the program today, we talked about what's happening in Georgia and the details of the law that they passed and whether or not it is actually as outrageous as the left claims it to be. And Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation did a good job of point by point kind of addressing the myths that are currently being perpetuated about whether this Georgia law is actually a return to Jim Crow laws. The short answer is no, it's nothing like that at all. But now we're going to talk a little bit about the corporate response to this, because, of course, this became a really big story when Major League Baseball decided that they were going to move their 2021 All-Star Game out of Atlanta, and now they have decided apparently to move it to Denver, Colorado. It seems that more corporations are going woke in the way that MLB appears to be with this move. My next guest has actually written a book that was published in February about how the political left is harnessing the power of business and especially capital markets to advance overtly and exclusively political ends, with an eye toward unconstrained control over every aspect of our lives. And he says a politicized corporate America threatens our nation, the freedoms we all cherish, and the fundamentals of capitalism itself. With me now to talk about his latest book is Steve Soukup, Vice President and publisher of The Political Forum, as well as the author of The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, How Political Correctness Captured Big Business. Steve, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're glad to have you, and we're so thankful that you've dug into this issue, because it's something, it's a question that I know a lot of people are asking. To start, when did you first start seeing a move of corporate America to the left?
Well, to be perfectly blunt, I started seeing it more than 20 years ago. When I started in the financial services business, in the mid-1990s, I joined an award-winning Washington research office at a large brokerage house. And within 5 years, our work which focused primarily on the risks that corruption posed to American business and to American capital markets, was no longer well received by our superiors. And they had a little talk with us about how we were attacking political corruption, because they were friends with the administration, which in the late 1990s was the Clinton administration. So this is something that I've noticed has been an issue for quite some time. It's only started to take on a much more sinister tone and a much more aggressive tone, probably within the past, say, 10 or 15 years, though.
Yeah, that seems to be true. As with so many things culturally, it seems to be escalating, right? The rate of growth seems to be picking up. Now, you've worked inside corporate America and you've studied this issue. From your perspective, is the move left by corporate America, is this driven by profit margin? They think this is the best way to make money. Is this people within these companies who are just... these are an expression of their own personal political beliefs? Do they think they just need to do this to survive? What do you think is primarily driving this?
Well, I think there are two types of actors in this drama. The first is the true believer. And not only are they true believers, but they're Gnostics. They believe that they understand the way to move American business and American society more generally toward a happier, more peaceful, more productive end, and they understand this better than anyone and in ways that nobody else has ever understood it before. But there's a second group as well that sees that this is very profitable and has jumped on the bandwagon and very much would like to make as much money as they can, similar to St. Augustine before they are converted
sure.
The faith.
Now, does the data suggest that this is profitable? And we've seen companies do this in various ways. We go back to, Walmart exerting pressures on state legislators 5-6 years ago. We see what Major League Baseball is doing. We saw what Target did. Is there reason for these corporate boardrooms to believe that if we move hard to the left and we do so publicly, that this is going to improve our profit margins?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's any reason for them to believe that. I think that a lot of corporate executives are scared. They're scared of their employees. They're scared of outside activists. And they're scared of some of their more prominent and larger activist shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's primarily what motivates them, is their fear that if they don't do something, that they're going to suffer the consequences. And specifically with respect to these large asset management firms, a lot of them have made it a priority and a very public priority that they will push corporations either to change their behavior or they will use their leverage as large shareholders to change executives, to change boards of directors, and to change bylaws of the company.
So when you talk about these holding companies that are invested in some of these companies, is this as simple as somebody from one of these asset managers, they make a phone call to a Target, to a Major League Baseball, to an American Airlines, to a Delta Airlines, and they say, hey, we need you to do this or else? Or is it more subtle than that?
Well, it's probably more subtle than that, although I can't say for sure. Larry Fink, who is the CEO of BlackRock, which is the largest asset management firm in the world, with almost $9 trillion in assets under management, has made it clear over the past 2 years that he believes that there is a certain social and environmental standard that his company wishes for the companies that they invest in to maintain. And if they do not maintain those standards, that his firm, with its $9 trillion in leverage, will punish them and will move to change management and to change directors.
And, you know, when you have that kind of leverage, you can understand why somebody would actually, why that would be pressure that might work. Now, Steve, in your book, The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, How Political Correctness Captured Big Business, and we encourage you to go get that book, you talk about how the traditional left has died. What do you mean by that?
Well, what we mean by that is that the economic left, the left that was, that grew out of Marx and dominated Western Europe throughout the late 19th and early 20th centuries, has largely been abandoned. The economic theories that Marx presented were pretty clearly a failure. His predictions for revolution were also pretty clearly failures. And so in response, the Marxists, both at the end of World War One and then at the end of World War Two again, had to figure out how to respond to that. And the way they responded was essentially to say, you know, this isn't about us. This isn't about the economy. This is about the culture. We need to change the culture before we can change anything else. And so that has become the primary focus of the left in the West ever since, is to change the culture and to capture the cultural institutions rather than to focus specifically on economics and controlling the means of production.
When you say that, it's interesting to me because when you hear the term culture warrior, I think most people would associate that with kind of conservative Christian right-wing activism. Do you think that the left wing is culture warring just as aggressively?
Oh, I think more so. In the early 1920s, Antonio Gramsci, the Italian Marxist, and Lukács, the Hungarian Marxist, and then a handful of German Marxists who eventually became the Frankfurt School, acknowledged that their revolution didn't occur because the hegemonic culture mm-hmm. prevented workers from understanding their true selves and their true interests. And so they made a concerted effort and a very aggressive effort to take the institutions of cultural transmission, which they've done over the last 100 years. They've taken media and entertainment and education and mainstream religion. And now they've finally reached the last institution that had been resistant to this, which is big business.
Now, I've had this conversation with people because in the first few months, first 100 days of the Biden administration, it's been curious how much he has prioritized transgender issues with his executive orders, with the Equality Act. Are these related in any sense? Because it's not a massive voting block. Do you think there's any connection, kind of what the corporate world is trying to do culturally, and President Biden's prioritization of these issues, which are certainly cultural issues?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that, you know, if you put Larry Fink from BlackRock and President Biden in a room and had them talk about these issues, that either one of them would grasp the connection. But the transformation of Western civilization focused very heavily on sexual behavior, sexual rules, sexual mores, because both the early post-World War I Marxists, and then mm-hmm. later Herbert Marcuse and some of the critical theorists in the United States focused very, very, very heavily on sexual behavior, seeing right. sex and sexual perversity and sexual dynamism, I guess, as the key to undermining the traditional Christian cultural milieu. And so, yes, they focused very heavily on sexual behavior and specifically on encouraging what would have traditionally been considered aberrant or very, very fringe sexual action. Yeah. So, yeah, this is very much a part of it.
And a moral revolution takes place when that which was once celebrated is now condemned, and that which was once condemned is now celebrated. And we can see on a whole range of issues how that has taken place. Now, Steve, what recommend, you know, we would, if the goal here is to depoliticize business, what do you recommend? How do you see that happening? Or do you see that happening?
Well, it's not going to be easy. There are two steps, I think, that need to be taken, or two different strategies that need to be taken. The first of which is to, an intermediate strategy, to understand what's going on, to learn who's responsible, to learn who's doing it and why they're doing it, and then to take back what is yours. Take back the capital that you have invested in your retirement fund, in your 401k, in your IRA, and use that more specifically to invest in funds or in corporations that don't promote political ideas above shareholder value. Likewise, take back your consumer dollars and spend them where you feel comfortable. So take back what is yours, understand what the problem is, take back what is yours. The second strategy, which is a much longer term strategy, is that we're going to have to make the long march back through the institutions. We will have to take these institutions back that the cultural left took over the last century. And that's going to take probably several decades, so it's not something that we can anticipate starting now and being done with it the next couple of years. It's going to be a long, hard slog.
It was a long, slow march to get to this point, and so it makes sense that it's going to be a long, slow march back to that point, but the alternative is quitting, which I'm certainly not open to that idea. You talk about how people can put their funds places that are not undermining what we're trying to do culturally. How do the average investor find that? Do you have any recommendations for where somebody can go to make sure that they're not in their 401k funding the enemy, so to speak?
Well, you get a quarterly statement that will tell you what funds your retirement savings are invested in, and you can look. And basically, if you see anything that says BlackRock or State Street or even Vanguard now, what you'll understand is that even if they're not explicitly socially responsible or ESG friendly, they are nevertheless, because of the pronouncements of their CEOs of these asset management firms, they are directly contributing to this idea that corporations should be overtly political.
Now, Steve, we've talked kind of about the investment, the institutional money side of this. There's also in the corporate space, there's the social media companies, which in many ways control the public conversations. Many people would argue they've become public forums, so they're no longer private companies. Where do you fall on that?
Well, the social media companies I'm less concerned about than I am about, for example, Amazon's domination of the web services arena. It was bad enough, and it was unfortunate for Apple and Google to remove Parler from their app stores. But when Apple Web Services took them off the internet, that was the huge blow.
Steve Sukup, we're going to have to cut you off there because we are out of time, but we thank you very much for your time. And folks, go pick up his book, The Dictatorship of Woke Capital. You won't be sad you did. Thank you, Steve. And thank you for joining us today. We look forward to being with you tomorrow as we break down America's problems and what you can do about it here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.
334.